Welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast, a podcast designed to help, support and educate men as they go through their own fertility struggles. I'm Kieran.
And I'm Sean. And we'll do that by sharing our stories of what we went through, as well as having guests share their knowledge and experience. Right, let's get into today's episode.
Welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast. This week we have the pleasure of having Josh Coulson on from Leeds, near my neck of the woods, mate.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you very much for having me.
No, we really mean it. It's
thanks for coming, Josh.
Yeah, we say it every week to every guy that comes on, but your words and your story and experience will be so valuable to so many men. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. So let's get straight into the meat of it. Let's start right back at the beginning. How did it all start for you? What was life before your fertility experience and your diagnosis, and how has it unraveled?
It's been a journey. And it's a journey that I don't know when the end will be. But pre-diagnosis, everything was just fine. You know, I was married in 2019. In August 2019, and obviously as probably the majority of men that are listening to this, you know, we all think, right, get married, start a family, go and, you know, live your life to the fullest. But after about a year of being married, so it was just after summer 2020, we sort of decided to, you know, knuckle down and start trying to conceive. But nothing was happening, which was a bit strange. My wife had done tests a few years before, diagnosed with polycystic ovaries, but prior to that she'd had other scans and everything had sort of been okay. Immediately I was thinking, you know, that's a female problem. And then we were referred to, so after a while of trying, nothing was happening. We were referred to, went to our GPs, both of us went there, both referred us to the fertility clinic. In June 2021, I did my first semen analysis, which is a bonkers experience, especially during COVID times when, you look at the, you look into the cupboard that's labelled adult content and there's nothing in there because COVID restrictions don't allow it. So that was a strange experience. After that first semen analysis, I was told that I had severe oats from the results that they'd had. Ultrasounds that I'd had previously were absolutely fine. There was sort of like a tiny cyst, an epididymal cyst that was no cause for concern, but severe oats, and it's just like, what is this? What does this mean? You know, all the doctors are saying stuff on the phone, you get your letters through, but then it's like, well, actually, what does this mean? Is there anything there? Is there not? And then I was referred for all the genetic tests and everything like that, and then because my semen analysis was so low, I was then referred to do a second one with a view to freezing. So I went for the second one, and the clinic had actually messed everything up. There must have been some administration error. I'd gone in there, done the semen analysis, expecting it to be frozen, obviously quite instantly, to then be told, oh, well, you're not doing a freeze today. So in my head, I'm thinking, well, if there's anything to work with, have I just missed the perfect opportunity here? So that was a bit of a kick in the teeth. But then the results of the second one came about and there was nothing to work with in that one as well. So it didn't really matter that they'd actually messed up the freezing sample. So that was it. That was in September 21, I had the second one. In February 2022, I was referred for a surgical sperm retrieval. That's when we got told that, you know, the only option for me to actually have a chance of finding any sperm was to go through the operation. And then in July of that year, so July 2022, we actually got found out. We found out that we weren't added to this list for the hospital. They completely missed us off the list of the fertility clinic. So we had a period from start of 2022 to July 2022 of just hoping that we were on this list, waiting to hear, for then us to chase to be told, oh, you've been missed off the list and there's no explanation. Which is just, as you can imagine, just absolutely heartbreaking. And it really annoyed us. And we then actually switched to private. So we were just sick of waiting. And then about a month after that, so we contacted Manchester Spire. We couldn't really find anywhere in Leeds that'd see us that quickly, which was a bit surprising. So we went to Manchester Spire, paid £250 to have a Teams consultation with the urologist there. It was absolutely fantastic. I think we learned more in that hour of speaking to him than we had done in the whole process about what was actually going on with me. He then said, you need to come in and see me. So I went in, he examined everything, and he put me on clomiphene, which was a bit bonkers, to be fair. I wouldn't say I had a bad reaction to it, but it made me very angry. Very, very angry. And I felt a little bit different in myself, but I knew I was on it for 3 months with the hope that it'd, you know, boost my sperm count, really. And then after 3 months of the clomiphene, I did another semen analysis and was told there was nothing to work with. I think they found 2 immotile sperm, but yeah, nothing there to work with, which was obviously kind of like, right, the operation is probably the way that we have to go with this. And I kind of took that on the chin and was like, cool, I don't really care, as long as they can try and find something, that'd be brilliant. And then after I did the third semen analysis, what happened? I got a call.
In the draw by now?
What's that?
Was there anything in the draws by now?
Oh, no, it still stayed empty.
No.
Bonkers, absolutely bonkers. Come on. I felt like knocking on the, not opening the door up and shouting down, like, is there anything to help me out here? Not as in a human, but as in, can you just put something in that cupboard?
So, can you imagine how distressed they'd be if you brought your own in? Just under your
imagine. Honestly, I did have some funny experiences with like 2 of the 3 semen analysis. It was some funny stories there, but I then got referred all my genetic testing, all the bloods and everything got taken, and I was told that there was no deletion in my Y chromosome. This was just on a letter as well, by the way, so this wasn't even over the phone. So I'm getting this letter with all these different words on there. I'm just thinking, what the bloody hell does this mean? So I got told there was no Y chromosome deletion, that and then that my chromosome pattern was in a mosaic pattern, which was potentially a cause of the infertility or the low sperm count. And then I got my date through for my surgical sperm retrieval in August 23, and a month before, one of the fertility doctors rung me up and she said, it's one of the things where someone says something on the phone and you just know it's not good news. And she said to him, she went, Joshua, has anyone ever gone through your genetic blood test results with you in detail? And I went, no, I just sat there, got loads of blood taken and no one's ever actually told me anything. And she went, right. And she's like, there's a bit of a problem. I'm going to refer you to a genetics counsellor. And I was just like, can anything get any worse here? Like, I'm crapping myself about this operation. I'm a month out. And now you're telling me there's a problem. So me and my wife met this genetics counsellor, and to be fair, she was the first person that actually sat down and said, how are you two doing? Which was, it was massive that. It was like, no one's ever asked us that. You know, like from like a medical profession, no one's ever gone, how are you two doing? And then she asked a really important, I thought it was important. She went, do you both feel like you want to stop? And we kind of looked at each other and just went, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, we've been through all this for like, this is coming up to like 2 years, two and a bit years. And we just looked at each other and went, yeah, it'd just be great to just stop. But obviously we've got to keep going. And she explained something about my genetic pattern, which we can talk about later if you want, because I know it's a bit long-winded this. Had the operation in August 23. And then 2 days later, I was lying in bed and I got the call. From the embryologist, and as blunt as she could be, she was like, is that Mr. Coulson? Yeah, really sorry, we haven't been able to find any sperm. And sort of like, it just felt like she put the phone down. And I was just like, what? Like, what's gone on here? Like, can you tell me anymore? She couldn't tell me anymore. And then obviously, when you get the news like that, it changes your life, doesn't it? You know, having that news of you're not going to be a biological father. I went off the rails quite quick. And then it took me quite a while to sort of get Josh back, if that's how we're going to call it. And then in January 2022, so a year ago, we then started our couple counselling, you know, for the donor conception, kind of the mandatory one that you have to do. So we went through that. We then selected a donor in July 24, which is obviously, it's just crazy, isn't it? Absolutely crazy. And then in August 24 this year, we were down in Devon in your neck of the woods, Sean. We were on holiday, 2 days from our holiday finishing. My wife Amy was doing the ovulation sticks, and basically we travelled back 2 days before our holiday finished to do our first round of IUI, which failed. September 24, second round of IUI failed. Third round of IUI in October 24 failed. November, we had a meeting with the fertility professor who explained that my wife could do IUI with drugs. And then we're told that we will get a cycle in before the end of 24, so in December. Then the fertility clinic messed up their opening hours over Christmas. So we had basically a month that we didn't do anything in November. Another month that we didn't do anything in December. And then, so I'll be honest with you, so I was, we've had a tough week this week. And it was, I nearly cancelled doing the podcast, but I thought like, I might as well come on this as raw as possible with all the emotions, because you've caught me on a bad week in terms of our fertility journey. So last week, my wife Amy was meant to start her first round of IUI with drugs. She's gone in there for her scans and was told that there was a dominant follicle, which is obviously really good news. She then went back a few days later and was told that it wasn't a dominant follicle, that basically there was two follicles together and the sonographer got it wrong, basically. So we thought, well, fair enough, that's okay, we'll keep going. And then on Monday night, so two nights ago, she went for a third scan to be told there's no dominant follicle. So we're going to miss another month now, which is obviously shit.
So, thank you for coming on. Like in this, like you said, that this raw time. So yeah, we really appreciate that. And you being so open, it means a lot to us. Thank you.
So yeah, that's that's where we're at now. So we're waiting to do our first round of IUI with drugs, just to see what goes on, really, you know, what happens. So we've got three rounds of that. And then if that doesn't work, it's then onto IVF, which we get one round free. So yeah, it's been a tough week. On Monday night, when I was kind of like waiting for my wife to give me a ring after the appointment, the scan, and she didn't do it, and I thought, oh, that could be good news, that. And then she got home, and I've seen her face come through the door, tears in her eyes, and I'm just like, oh, come on, just give us a break here. So we basically had like November, December, January, where we've not done anything, we've not moved forward. And we're kind of two people that we always like to be moving forwards, and especially when we've been in it since 2021, you know, standing still. And I know it's 3 months, and to be fair, 3 months has gone quick, but still, you know, we need to be moving forward with this. We're not getting any younger, are we?
Yeah, man, it's I certainly know that feeling very well, in terms of, you know, your wife comes through the door and you can read their faces, something's not right. You know, I'm just going to echo what Sean said. Like, thanks so much for coming on, because where you are right now is extremely tough. And neither Sean nor myself would have blamed you if, you know, you'd said, look, I can't do this at the moment because this is tough. But thanks so much, yeah, for coming on and speaking open and honestly. I can't say it enough. Like, guys are going to hear this and be like, that's how I feel right now. Because quite often when you're going through these journeys, these fertility journeys, you feel on your own. You know, you think like you're the only one that is experiencing this, and this has happened to me right now. But what you're saying has been said to us so many times, in terms of mistakes by clinics, by professionals, misinformation, and then things going wrong. You know, it's so much more common than people assume it would be or should be. I mean, some of this, what you've talked about, is human error, isn't it? Like the mistakes they've made in the past in the clinic, and not having things frozen, and you know, or getting that wrong, and the information that you got during your first diagnosis wasn't as good as it should have been. Like, there's so many things that could have been done to cushion it. It's the only way I can explain it, because you're still going to take a hit from it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's I think it's like I don't want to come in here and start like slagging off the clinics, right? But there's also a lack of empathy as well. And a really good example of this is every time we've been in that clinic, the same phrase gets spoken to us, and it's, oh God, you two should be further down the line now. And it's just like, shut up. Like, honestly, shut up. Don't you think we know this? Like, you missed us off a list, like, for nearly 7 months, when the waiting list was 6 months anyway. So then that's 13 months that we've done nothing. And it's like, and for you to then go, oh, you should be further down the list. Like, come on. Do not be saying that to us. Do not be saying that to us.
And it's like what you said, like how far down it was, how far down the line until someone actually asked you, and how are you both doing?
Like, incredible. It was really good. She was like, that genetics counselor, she was really good. And like, she didn't have to ask us that. But I think like, it seemed like she was the only person that kind of understood what we were going through, even though she might not have even cared really. But the fact that someone had just gone, how are you two doing? And she didn't even start. I remember she didn't even start by saying hi. She just went, how are you two doing? And it was just, wow, thanks for asking. Because like you say, it's lonely, isn't it?
Yeah, that should be the first question that every professional sees you ask.
Yeah, I agree.
How are you? Because the emotional stress it puts on you, the stress on a relationship, the stress on just general your mental health, your physical well-being, everything. How are you? Because without you two, it can't happen. And so often that emotional aspect is missing, like drastically missing. And you do feel like you're just the empathy's missing. Like, you know, you said it, and you just become a number. That's what you feel like sometimes. I've had very different experiences. I've had one experience that was very challenging and another that was amazing. But it is definitely clinics and how they implement certain things, the guidelines that are put in place that make the patient's experience easier. Because it can't be completely easy because it's such a stressful thing, but it can ease it a bit, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things that happened recently as well, so it was over the Christmas closures when we got told that we'd get a cycle in of the IUI, and then basically got told that, well, the clinic's closed. And I remember my wife was on the phone to, it must have been one of the receptionists, and she just said, oh, you're just going to have to wait till next month. It's just a month.
Hmm.
And it's like, what do you mean it's just a month? Like,
yeah. That's really, really unfortunate. That's not having a grasp of how many just a months that you've been through.
Yeah, it's just we have been messed around. I mean, there's no good time for this to fall on anyone, but there was, they had like the clinic was moving from NHS to private, so there was loads of stuff going on, and we just got absolutely messed around with everything. Like, we shouldn't have been missed off lists. We know people now that are ahead of us that only started their journey, I think like 18 months ago, not even that. Amazing.
Yeah. And it's all because
the whole situation is mad. Sorry, Kieran. It's like, I remember when I went for my micro TZ and we were traveling an hour to our clinic with NHS funding, but traveling to a clinic an hour away in a different county. And whilst I was in having my operation done and another guy was having his operation done, our partners were talking to each other, and it turns out they lived 5 minutes away from that clinic, but weren't eligible for, well, they didn't do funding there in that county. Whereas we were traveling an hour to that for it. But it's like, it's just so much unfairness and so much disparity in the whole situation. And it's really, really difficult.
Yeah, it's tough. It's been tough. And like I said earlier, I know what our end goal is, and that's obviously to have a family, but I don't know when we're going to get there. And that's the honest truth.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's, I said it already once, but we are so thankful for you coming on. And there's been a few guys in this series who have come on, like yourself, who they're in it. You know, you don't know when the end is or where it is. And that is, it's really admirable. And I can't tell you, like, how much it'll be helping other people, because there's one thing looking back in hindsight, but when you're in the thick of it now, that is, it's really commendable. So thank you.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, when I get to the end of my journey, when I get to the end of our journey, that's when, you know, it'd be good to raise more awareness, you know, from a personal point of view about it, just because I want to do that, I want to finish what I'm on at the minute, or what we're on at the minute. But yeah, it's hard to talk about. It really is. It's hard to talk about, and it's hard to talk about with friends as well, because, I mean, none of my friends are going through it. I don't know anyone that is going through it, and that's why it's hard.
I'm not going to assume this because you never know, but I wouldn't be surprised if someone closer than you think is going through it, because it's so common. But we just don't talk about it as men. We just shut it down. And it's something that I found, and Sean found, actually, when we started to talk to people about what was going on. People very close to us or in our working environments were experiencing the same thing, because it is so, the statistics are increasing constantly. And it was surprising. I definitely had a few surprises But it's getting over that barrier of talking, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And like, I mean, that the WhatsApp group's fantastic. That was a big help for me. That, and you know, if anyone from that group is listening to this and listening to my story, and if they do want to message me separately, I'm more than happy for anyone to just drop me a message or whatever. I always said I'd love to walk into the fertility clinic over here with a massive like piece of paper and just stick my name and number on there for it, because you see the blokes in the waiting room, don't you? And just with my name and number on there, just say anyone wants to just have a chat about anything, ring this number. I'd just love to do that, but yeah.
At the moment, at the moment, Josh, you've got a lot to process. And as you said, like, it's something you want to do in the future. And, you know, me and Sean would love to like do something with you in the future. But right now, you've got to look after you, you know, because it's a rough ride. And we've spoken about it. Me and Sean have spoken about it, actually, what we went through and now enables us to do this. But when I was going through the thick of it, I wouldn't have been able to do what I'm doing now. I wouldn't be able to do.
That's the thing. We all have a finite amount of bandwidth and you know, emotional resilience, and it's about utilizing it as and like where you need at the time. And just what you're doing now is massive and incredible. And I think back to where I was when I was in your situation. I wouldn't have been on a podcast talking about it. So, you know, you're doing amazing stuff already. And then as and when you're ready, we'll do anything we can to support you with that.
Yeah,
brilliant. It's good. We need to raise more awareness. I mean, the stuff that I suffered with, just mental health wise, is just ridiculous. But it is all because of the infertility, and obviously, the more we speak about that, hopefully, it helps. It helps more people. But yeah, at the minute, I am looking after myself. Like you say, I've learned to be a little bit more selfish, which sounds weird because I don't like people being selfish. But you know, we've missed our friends' christenings before because we're just not in the right place. It's not the right thing for us to be there. Missed birthday parties, you know, stuff like that. You have just got to look after yourself in this situation.
Yeah.
Oh, massively. And that, like what you said there, is like by not going to the things that you know are going to cause you a lot of pain is really important, and learning to say no, because we don't, like, generally we're people pleasers and we go along with it and you do it and it's so hard at the time. And you mentioned about, you know, being selfish and you don't like to be, but you know, ultimately, you know, the other end of that is because you're saying that you'd rather be selfless. But the first step of being selfless is being selfish, because you can't pour from an empty cup. And if you're running on empty, then you won't be what you want to be to other people anyway. So it's about taking that step back, putting yourself first, especially in times of like these huge challenges, like what you're going through now. So you're doing the right thing.
Yeah, and you don't have to please people. I mean, if you say no to, you know, your friends' kids' christening, for example, if they're good enough friends, they'll completely understand. So, you know, there's no worrying in upsetting people. You've got to look after yourself.
Yeah. And it's learning to that no is a complete sentence. It's not no because or no but. Like, you don't need to justify the answer. It's just no, and that's a whole new skill in itself.
I think that's a skill that you fertility journey or not. You as you grow up or get older, you kind of learn it because life becomes so busy, you know, and to be able to go no is a powerful, powerful thing. So just what, talking about that, but in terms of self-care and stuff, what is there anything that you particularly do that helps or you find has helped and makes you feel better?
One thing for me, everything. Yeah. So one thing that I've gotten into since I got married in 2019, so just before that, I was on the old wedding diet. I started running quite a lot, really got into the running. And then in April, May 2023, I did my first marathon. And then I did another one last year. So running for me has massively helped keeping fit. I'm a bit podgy at the minute, I'm not going to lie. Christmas and everything just ended. But yeah, so running's massively helped me. It's not for everyone, is it? I hate the gym. I absolutely hate the gym. I go to the gym, but I hate the gym. And I don't mind saying that. I get bored. And I'm sorry if that upsets you. Right.
I'm off. I'll see you later.
I get bored in the gym. I really do. And I try and make it fun where, like, I listen to absolute rubbish music just to try and make it a bit better. Shania Twain, blaring through the AirPods, something like that, just to try and make it a little bit...
Hang on, is that classed as rubbish? I think I might be in trouble. High up on my playlist.
Yeah, she was quite good at Glastonbury last year, so it's probably a bad example. But yeah, like running has massively helped me. I really enjoy it. I actually do enjoy it. When I'm out there, I don't think about anything really. And I'm the type of person where I'll think about 1,000 things at once and never get anything done. So for me to go out and just have a blank mind, it massively helps me. And after the operation, after the surgical sperm retrieval, I had the MTESI operation, I spiraled massively to a place where even now I don't like being on my own. So I went into probably the darkest place that I've ever been to in my life. I don't think I will ever get there again. But then I got back into the running. I gained a lot of weight during that time of the recovery. My recovery was quite bad from the operation. But then I got back into my running and slowly but surely, said it earlier, started to try and rebuild Josh.
Yeah. That's what it's all about. It's that place you described going to and that you hope you never go back to. That is the bottom. That is, there's only one way up from there, only one direction from there. But what you're doing after that is you're essentially building the foundations back again and becoming a newer version of you with like added things such as the running. And it's like what Kieran says, is like infertility challenges. It gives you new information about yourself, and with that, armed with that information, you're then like you are. Building a stronger version of yourself. And to come back to the running aspect, like that is key. It's not about doing exercise for the sake of exercise. It's about doing something that brings you joy. And if something doesn't, you're never going to do it long term. It'll just come and go like a habit you can't stick to. So find what you love, like, no matter who it is. I love running, but I can't do it. Like, I'm just not built for it. Like, my head loves it because, like you said, it's just a good way of like escaping. And but yeah, my skinny legs just don't cope well with it, with a big heavy body. But I like the feeling
that it gives me afterwards. Yeah. And like I still have my really bad days where all I can think about is that I'm never going to be a biological father again, be a biological father, and that'll never leave me. That, you know, those feelings of, breaks my heart. I have days where I'm just like completely heartbroken. But then those are the days where I'm like, right, get your ass up, get your running trainers on and just get out the door and see what's what. And I like the feeling that it gives me. So that's why I do it. And yeah.
Another important factor that you've mentioned is that these big things, they don't just go, you don't get over them. It will always be a part of you, and it's learning those coping strategies and recognizing when it's coming, like when it's starting to arise, and what you do in response to it. And on that note, like, is there anything, like, what is it that you did to kind of move past that and start exploring other routes to parenthood? What is it that helped you get there?
I think it was, for me, it's just, so when you get the information or the news that, you know, you're never going to be able to have children of your own, it's you've got to accept it. And it's, I don't know if I will ever fully accept it. Is my honest truth. At the start of it, when I got the news, I was basically well, they've got something wrong. Something must be wrong. That's wrong. Have they done the operation correctly? I remember saying to the surgeon before, if you can't find anything, like, just keep digging. I don't care if I'm on the operating table for a day. Just keep digging till you find something. And it's like, you go through a phase of denial, don't you? Of like, this is just wrong. They're missing something. This can't happen to me. But for me to kind of start accepting it, I actually think selecting a donor, now that might sound weird, but then I'm sat there, like, we're both scrolling like through the donor selection, and like it felt like this is real. Do you know, like, it didn't feel real, but it was real, because this is our next step. If we don't select a donor, then we'd like spoke about like adoption and stuff like that, and we're not sure if that was for us. So like, to move forwards, we had to do we had to select a donor. And I think at that point it was, it kind of, in a weird way, sort of helped me accept that this is what is going to have to happen for us to have a family.
Mm.
And it's weird. It's so weird, that whole process of, you know, donor selection. But when you're doing it, for me, it felt like, if we don't do this, this is where we stop with trying to have a family. So we have to do this. And you kind of, it obviously sounds like I'm forced into accepting that this is my life now. But stuff like that, in a weird way, does kind of help you move, not past it, but sort of slowly start accepting it. But yeah. I still have my bad days where I do think, like, I just want to ring up the urologist and just go, mate, are you sure there was nothing, like, there was nothing there? Like, are you sure? And I just thought he's going to go, yes, Joshua, we didn't find anything. I'm like, okay, thanks, mate. Have a good evening. but yeah, I think it's just being in the process, really, that has allowed me to start accepting this is who I am. This is what my bollocks don't do.
Yeah. But it takes a lot to get there, and it takes action to get there. It doesn't happen on its own. And one massive piece of action is, like what you said, is selecting the donor. You did that. You were actively pursuing your dream to be a father, and that is a huge step. So, like,
I kept on putting that on hold as well. I wouldn't do it. I just wouldn't do it. And like, Amy was sat there and I could see her on a phone, and I was like, she's either on Tinder or she's looking at donor selection. And thankfully it was the donor selection. And she was like, do you want to come and have a look? And I'm just like, nah, you're all right. I just didn't want anything to do with it. But then when I actually started thinking about it, it's like, this is a decision that we've both got to make. When I started accepting that I have got to be part of this, then that's when I think I did change a little bit, to be like, right, this is now our next phase. Let me mentally prepare for this. But I don't know anything about the donor that we've selected. I honestly can't even remember any characteristics or anything. And that's not me being like ignorant about it or anything like that. I just cannot, like, I can't remember anything about what it was that why we chose that person.
You've talked about something there that I think a lot of guys go through but never really understand why, in terms of why time gives you that. You process over time, and people process at different speeds, but there's probably, you couldn't put your finger on why. You just felt it was time to look at those donors. Like, there were stages in my fertility journey where I didn't know what had changed, but you'd wake up one day and be like, I'm ready to make that next step. But it took time. And the key thing is giving yourself that time, like you did, that your missus wanted you to have a look, but you weren't ready and you just took that time. And I expect that put a lot of strain on your relationship, did it?
It did. So another thing was, so your podcast. So Amy had said to me, Josh, do you know there's a podcast from Knackered Knackers? And I was just like, all right, cool. And I remember like having it on my, I remember having it on my phone, on my Spotify, ready to press play. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't listen to it. And then we went into our, and obviously I'm like, why can't I listen to it? Why can't, I can't, just, and I couldn't press play. And then we had one of our marriage, not marriage, come on, man, about one of our donor counselling sessions, not marriage counselling, our marriage is fine. And we had one of our donor counselling sessions as a couple. And I remember the counsellor said to me, she goes, like, she must have said to me, like, have you tried anything, Josh, to help you with your feelings? And I went, oh, like, there's a podcast and then all this stuff. And she went, what's the problem, Josh? And I just went, I'm scared. And she just went, what are you scared of? And I remember just breaking down in tears and I couldn't speak. And I think at that point, I think Amy had then realised that we were kind of at different, on different levels of like, she was ready to go with the donor stuff and bang, let's start looking at who's available and all this. And I was way further back in where, you know, in comparison to where Amy was, where I couldn't even play the podcast. She bought a book which was about like a family and infertility journey. And she was like, I bought that for us. Couldn't read it, couldn't open it. There was a program on TV at the time about people that were donor children. And she's like, maybe we should watch it together. And I was just like, no, don't want to watch it. And I just wasn't ready. And then I think Amy realizing that, me realizing that, we then, obviously a key in the relationship, you don't want any strains on your relationship. It's pretty impossible to not have strains on your relationship when you're going through something like this. But I think like we both communicated really well at that point, which massively helped us. And I remember about 3 weeks after that, that's when I listened to the first episode of your podcast. I had like a 20-minute walk into work and I thought, right, come on, Josh, just put your AirPods in, just press play, just listen to it. And I listened to it for 20 minutes from a 20-minute walk. And I think that's when I slowly started accepting what was going on in my life.
Mm. Nice. Thank you. Yeah.
It's nice to know that we, you know, maybe helped you a little bit with that. You did the work. As long as we didn't put you off gambling away on that first episode.
So yeah, no, it was good. And then I enjoyed listening to it. And then the WhatsApp group massively helped. There was a guy who'd put something in the WhatsApp group about his genetics. And when I was going through like my bad patch after the operation, and I was told all this genetic stuff, I actually reached out to a genetics charity called Unique. I don't know if you've heard of it, but basically it like pairs you up with other people who have got similar problems with like chromosomes and their genetics. And they basically, when you sign up, you fill out like your details and you can upload medical notes so they can have a good look and try and match you, you know, like a bit of a support group. And I filled out this document and I think I put in two of my medical notes. And a week later, they came back and basically come back with how many people that have got your condition that they can match you with. And obviously, you can then have a bit of a support network. Do you know how many people they came back with for me?
None.
Oh, no.
And honestly, that was during like my bad time as well. So I was feeling low. And then when I found out like there was no one to talk to about anything like this, that was a killer. It was a massive kick in the teeth. But then a guy on the WhatsApp group put something in there, and I was having private counselling at the time, and it was kind of like I remember the counsellor started crying because I said that I'd joined this WhatsApp group, And I realized that I wasn't the only one in the world that was going through this. And she started like, she went, wow, that's so powerful. And she was like crying her eyes out. And then I would cry my eyes out. And I was like, am I going to have to be the counselor here or are you? but it was that WhatsApp group. And like when that guy had mentioned about like his genetic patterns and chromosomes, it was like, that was a big turning point for me for like, shit, I'm not the only one with this problem.
You know, that's an important moment. Like similar situation, but just with the infertility, because there was no one talking about it when I went through it. I remember when I first started hearing of other guys, and I wasn't the only one. It's really important, because that's what you feel, isn't it? You just feel so alone. And I can't imagine, you know, when you've put in your details into that and your condition, thinking, I'm finally going to find someone to help validate what I'm going through, and to be told they had no one on, but let's remember, it's no one on their database.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think after, at the time, obviously it was a bit of a shock. Cause I was reading through like my genetic notes and stuff like that. And like, I've got to have like additional testing for something to do with my genetics and the chromosome problem that I have. So I don't know if I was expecting to be loads of people, you know, signed up to it, but I expected one at least. But yeah, that was a really bad moment.
It's a bit like me with my sperm. Like, there's got to be at least one.
Yeah.
Talking about that, come on, we're not going to let you off the hook. What's the your stories from giving a sample? We'll bring back what we haven't probably said, I think, Kieran, for at least a few episodes. But wanxiety.
When I messaged Kieran about it, I just call them public wanks.
Oh yeah, we had a discussion about this, didn't we? I've forgotten about that, in terms of what we call it on the podcast. And what,
yeah.
It? Public wank sounds a bit a bit more public.
without the risk of getting nicked.
I was telling my wife, we were out walking the dog earlier, and I went, oh, I might say public wanks on this, and she went, you can't say that, Josh. I'm like, sorry, but I will do. But I mean, obviously, as I hope no man has to go through a semen analysis, because it is bloody awkward, isn't it? I mean, my first one, I was absolutely terrified. I went in with like the hat on, the shades on, the hoodie up. I just thought, that makes me look like a weirdo, like from the start, doesn't it? I just should have worn like a big bushy mustache or something like that. But the first time I've gone in there, so I've gone into the room. Obviously, I said that there was no adult content, and then they said to me, "Right, when you come out, sit on that chair." And the point, because it was like COVID, like you got allocated a chair. So I thought, all right, fair enough. I didn't really look at it. Done what you had to do. Go outside, and I'm just sat there, and I'm just like that, like looking at my pot of jizz, right. What I didn't realise was right in front of me was the waiting room for like some consultations. So there's like couples that are in there just staring at me, and I'm there just like, and I'm like,
brilliant.
Oh, shit. And I'm just like, can this day get, good job I have my hat and my shades on, because I do not want to be known as a weirdo around Leeds, right? And then the second time was the worst. The second time was the worst. I've gone into the waiting room, and a bloke came in after me. And he's like, sat down, and he's like smiling at me. And obviously I'm not happy. I'm not happy being in the fertility clinic. So I get called first, get allocated a seat again, sit down there. And then he comes out of the room next door. And he sits down, and he's just like staring at me, and I'm just like hat on again, just looking down like that. And he goes, "All right, mate." And I'm just like, I don't know if this is a place to talk. And I was like, yeah. And he's just, I've just got like, again, pot of jizz just there like that. I'm trying to like put it up my sleeve so he can't see it. And he's just like trying to talk to me. And he's like, "How did it go?" And I'm like, is this actually, like, you know, there's like points in your life where you think, is this real? Is this actually happening to me right now? And I just wanted the whole world to just swallow me up and go, right, we don't want you anymore, just you can get out of this situation. But he was just there, like, just constantly staring at me and trying to talk to me for about 5 minutes. And I'm like, it's not a place where you have conversations, is it? It's just,
yeah,
it's just
like, what? There's all manner of weird things that you could talk about, but yeah, definitely best avoided in the situation.
Literally, just head down and just don't look at anyone, but full on conversation. I was fully expecting to ask me what I'm having for my tea, but honestly, I don't know what goes through people to actually want to speak to people in that situation, especially with a pot of jizz in your hand.
Yeah. I reckon that quite a bit of it would have been his self-nerves. Maybe he was nervous. Yeah. He just didn't know what to say.
Don't say anything, mate.
Yeah, if you don't know what to say, don't say anything. But hey, maybe he was on his own little mission to break down the stigma and the anxiety.
Yeah. I was just wanting to get in there, get out, and then, yeah.
Do you think... Now, what you've been through and what you're going through, if you were sat in that room and you saw a nervous guy, would you say, are you all right, mate? Would you talk to him?
Probably not. Like, and not? I probably wouldn't. That is my honest opinion. And I don't mind speaking to people. I don't mind speaking. Yeah, I'll speak to anyone, but in that situation, nah, I don't think I would.
It's kind of like, yeah, it's a bit socially awkward. You'll know, everyone knows you're there to, you know, literally have a wank and, you know.
It's like in the, yeah. It's like in the waiting room for the IUI stuff. It's just, the blokes are just there. And like, yeah. I suppose that's not as bad because we all, like, you've not just gone and had a wank in one of the rooms. You'd all sat there. And there is some times where I'm just like, I feel like saying to them, like, everyone all right? Do you know what I mean? Like, I'd do it in that situation because we all don't have pots of our own semen in our hands. But I just keep quiet. That's what I would do.
Fair enough. This is a message that if anyone sees Josh in a waiting room with a pot of sperm in his hand, don't talk to him.
Yeah, please don't.
Mate. But it's things like that. Like, it's breaking down. You know, it is an awkward situation, isn't it? Like, all three of us have experienced it. Literally, there are millions of guys in the world that have experienced this because, you know, they're going through similar things. And it's just trying to make it feel a little bit more normal, isn't it? Little laughs like this at the end. And sometimes it can feel like you're far, far away from those chuckles. But
you've got to try and find something funny, haven't you?
Yeah. You've got to, I think men deal with stress like that. Like I, it doesn't matter how stressed I am. If someone can get me laughing, I definitely feel better. Like it's something rises, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think that's how I deal with a lot of stuff, like by humor. So you've got to, like in this process, you've got to laugh sometimes. Right.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't, you'll just cry. And I'm sure, as we all know, there's enough crying in this process, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely is. You know, it's like polar opposites of the emotions, isn't it?
Laughing. I mean, like the whole rollercoaster of emotions. Like, just take my last 10 days, for example. You know, with my wife going in and getting told some decent news at the start of the week, to then, oh, maybe we got that wrong. To then now, actually, you're probably not going to be doing an IUI cycle. Like, that is just a prime example of the rollercoaster of emotions that you go through, and that's only one element of it.
Yeah. But do you know what, mate? We've said it before, I'm going to say it again. Like, thanks so much for coming on. Like, you're really in the trenches right now, as we said before. But you're going to help so many guys. Yeah. So many guys realize that. Right at this moment, there's someone else going through it and is in exactly the same place and is feeling exactly the same. So we can't thank you enough. Now, before we finish, we always ask the same question to every guest. And the question is, if you could give one bit of advice to another guy know, facing a similar situation to you, facing infertility, what would that one bit of advice be?
I think I said it earlier about communication with your partner. I think if you let things boil over or keep things inside, it's just going to damage you even more. Not just you personally, but as a couple. You've got to be open and honest with how you're feeling with each other, because both of you are involved. It's not just you, even though it might just feel like it's you. So being open and honest and having that really good communication with your partner about how you're feeling, what you want to do, what you don't want to do, what you're comfortable with, you know, what you're not comfortable with, it massively helps. Like when I realized we were on the same page, or we weren't on the same page, that massively helped us then get on the same page for our journey. Mm. And then actually selecting the donor became an easier process when we were both ready to do that. So communication, it's just massive. And it helps. It does massively help.
Yeah, that's perfect brilliant advice, mate. You know, yeah. Something that many people that have been on have echoed, you know, talking, communication. So there must be some truth in it somewhere, eh?
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for coming on, buddy. Really, really appreciate it. It's been an absolute pleasure. You know, we wish you all the luck for the future. Please keep us updated. You know, you're part of the Male Fertility Podcast family now. You know, we want to hear how you're getting on, and if any way we can support you, let us know. And you know, we're here for a chat if you need one.
Mm. Spot on. No, thanks. Thanks for having me on. It's been great.
Thanks for listening. If this episode has helped you, do us a quick favour and leave us a review. You don't even have to use your real name. Every single review helps another man find this show when he needs it the most. It's honestly the best way you can help the next guy. If you've got a question or something you'd like us to cover on the mailbag, drop us an email at themalefertilitypodcast@gmail.com. We read every message and we love hearing from our listeners. And if you'd like a bit more expert guidance and support from other men on the same journey as you, you're welcome to join our free private community at nexusfertility.com. It's totally confidential and designed just for you by guys that get it. For our latest updates, follow us on social media at the Male Fertility Podcast. And remember, gents, you're not on your own.